Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast of Connecting Faith. Programs like this are made possible through the financial support of listeners like you. You can find out more or make a gift by clicking on the Support Faith Radio tab on the homepage. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you've had a great weekend and looking forward to today's program here on Connecting Faith. And before we get to that, I do want to just remind you that coming up today, it's Everyday Relationships with Dr. Greg Smalley. That's happening at 4 o'clock, brand new program to our Faith Radio lineup, and we're very excited about that. Susie Larson will be co-hosting that, and we'll get to hear and learn from Dr. Greg Smalley, be encouraged. And so I just want to remind you that's coming up today at 4 o'clock, and of course a great lineup between now and then. And today's hour, we're going to focus on parenting. In fact, we're going to talk about how to be an outstanding parent and raise great kids using the power of personal accountability. Boy, that just doesn't that sound like a statement that you want to just hang on to, say, and think all of us, no matter what age or stage we might be in that parenting process. You know, we want to have great kids and want to find out more about personal accountability to do that. We're going to visit with John G. Miller and talk about parenting the QBQ way. John G. Miller is a Cornell University graduate, and he's founder of QBQ, Inc., and he's worked with hundreds of Fortune 500 companies as well as government and faith-based organizations and thousands of individuals to help them make personal accountability a core value. And if you have maybe heard of some of John's writings, then you have been you've been blessed by the great challenge that's available. He's authored several books, including QBQ, The Question Behind the Question, Flipping the Switch, Unleash the Power of Personal Accountability, Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional, and the new one, the one we're talking about, Parenting the QBQ Way, he actually wrote with his wife. And he can speak more than just theoretically about this, because he and his wife Karen have 7 children and 1 grandson. And we're happy to have John G. Miller on the line with us today. John, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Neil, great to be here. Thank you.
And we were just chatting before the show that Denver is, what, 60 and sunny today, right?
Well, I would say mid-50s. But after living in the Twin Cities for a dozen years and now being down in Denver 15 years, I know exactly where I want to be today.
Okay. Yes, well, we somehow are thinking that this is making us hardier for all this, but anyway.
Yes, there's all kinds of denial going on.
Well, we're excited to find out a little bit about, you know, maybe a little bit about your background. Were you a business person first before you got into this really a unique, I guess, consulting niche, I would call it that, maybe?
Well, I appreciate you asking. I came out of Cornell with an agricultural economics degree in 1980. My wife was 19, I was 22, we got married, and we moved to Plymouth, Minnesota to live in the Cricket Inn. Why would we do that, Neil? Because a little tiny company called Cargill had hired me off the Cornell campus. So I worked for Cargill, and we went to wonderful places like Mankato and Great Falls, Montana, and St. Louis, Missouri, and back to Minneapolis, all in 5 years with Cargill. And one day I saw an ad in the newspaper looking for a high-energy, successful salesperson to sell training in the Twin Cities, and I applied, and guess what? They hired me. So in early 86, I moved from them to the training industry, and I've been in this training industry as a salesperson, facilitator, trainer, speaker ever since.
Now, in the process, you and your wife have 7 children. Actually, I guess 4 and 3, kind of, right? Is that maybe just...
Well, we just kept collecting them along the way.
Okay.
We started in Montana in 83 with Kristen, and she actually has the grandson for us now and also a new baby girl, so we have 2 grandkids. And then we had a few more children all natural way, 4 of them. And then in 2000, we adopted 3 little girls who the county down here in Denver had, and they had no place for them, so we took them in. and now they are 17, 15, and 14. So we've got seven total, ranging from 30 to 14.
Well, we're going to ask a little bit later on if QBQ way of parenting changed at all with those three additions, or we'll just get some perspective on that. But let's talk a little bit about QBQ, the question behind the question. I was thinking, you know, parenting is filled with questions anyway, and you're offering us more. So that, you know, is this a solution, or is this just a new way to look at the problem?
that's a good way to frame it. We're actually offering the better questions. Let me give your listeners a little history on QBQ. Back in the early 90s, as I was sitting in workshops with Minneapolis St. Paul firms, I mean, really good company, Niels, names you'd know, like St. Jude Medical over there in Little Canada. I know your listeners are all around the Midwest, but a lot of Twin Cities firms. I would facilitate leadership training. We'd spend up to 3 days together. And the reason that's an important point is listening to clients over a decade, I began to realize we all tend to ask some really lousy questions. And in the corporate world, those questions sound like, you know, why do we have to go through all this change? When is someone going to train me? Who made the mistake? Why can't that department get their act together? That kind of thing. And I was listening, and around 1994, I coined this phrase, the question behind the question, and I went over to St. Jude Medical in St. Paul, and I taught it to a small group. And I came back a couple months later, and amazingly, they were using it. And they had shortened it, along with a couple other clients, to the acronym QBQ, and that was 94. And in 95, I left the training company I represented, and I went off as a speaker to talk about personal accountability and the QBQ, because what the question behind the question methodology I had developed was doing for people, including me, because I need it, was helping me and helping others practice personal accountability, as opposed to some really other bad traps we can talk about that we tend to fall into as humans. So that's where it started. It started in the corporate world. As a Christian, of course, I knew I could speak in churches, and I do that now and then. Most of my business to this day, I'm almost 55. My business is 99.8% in the corporate world. However, along the way, Neil, the audiences that I would speak to at State Farm or St. Jude or whatever company I might be at, of course, those audiences, a lot of them were moms and dads, and they would say, I want to use this at home. And for years, they would take QBQ home, and the QBQ book came out a few years ago, and then they would use that at home. But Karen and I, my wife Karen and I, finally last year decided it was time to put it into a parenting framework so moms and dads could take it straight into their hearts and be better parents.
By the way, we do have five copies of the Parenting the QBQ Way, the expanded edition, available, and we'll open up the phone lines here in the next 15, 20 minutes or so and give you an opportunity to call in with maybe a specific question or maybe learning how to get a better question, and we'd love to have you get a copy of this great resource as well. That, John, you know, one of the things, I guess, talk a little bit more about that that personal accountability side of things, because I know one of the things you talk about in the book is that, you know, we can really only change ourselves. And I think, you know, as parents, it goes, is that true? I mean, don't we have to change our kids?
Well, certainly our job is to train up our children. Our job is to coach our children. Our job is to teach. In fact, that's actually an interesting point. I'll just mention that right now. We believe in early parenting, we're building. At some point, we change to relating. Now, that's a different discussion, Neil, maybe later in the show. We go from building our children to relating to our children. But the really great parent says not, why doesn't my child change? Why does he keep doing that? Why is she always fill in the blank? The really tremendous parent looks in the mirror and says, okay, what can I do to change me? What can I do to learn new skills? I mean, there's so many directions we could go with this material. Another way to describe QBQ parenting is no excuses parenting. Neil, the blessing in my life is as I get to go speak at these companies around the nation, I always tease them when I talk a little bit about parenting. I mean, the sessions are corporate, but I bring in the parenting stuff a little, and I say how often we've heard, hey, John, I'm not responsible for what my kids become. It was Hollywood, the culture of moral decay. It was the schools. It was the churches. They didn't do their job. Hey, John, it was the friends they hung out with. You know, Neil, every parent that has a child who's disappointed them will say, well, they got in with the wrong crowd. And it sounds a little tough on people, but in reality, great parenting is no excuses parenting. So in the book, Karen and I wrote this statement, and we know this challenges people. We wrote, my children are a product of my parenting. And there's no if, and, or but at the end of that, Neil. There's a period. My children are a product of my parenting. So in other words, if I look at my 2-year-old and he's out of control, I can't just say, well, that's a 2-year-old. No, what can I do to shape him up? What can I do to train him up? What can I do to be a firm and strong and loving parent? It always comes back to the mom and dad taking personal accountability.
You've mentioned several times, you know, the why questions, and you talk about those being, those are the IQs, the incorrect questions, the why, the when, the who. Talk about why those are the wrong questions.
Well, Neil, I got to tell you, you know your stuff. Those IQs, which stands for incorrect questions, are questions that tend to begin with why, when, and who. So and you can make up a whole bunch of them. You know, why is this happening to me? Why don't I ever get a break? Why don't my kids listen to me? Why doesn't my husband help out more? Why doesn't my wife do this or that? We can go to when questions. When will my teenager stop that annoying habit? When will the schools deal with bullying? When will society stop supporting so much entitlement thinking? Well, when I ask those when questions, you know what I've done? I've just said, hey, today I'll procrastinate. I'll habitually defer action to a future time, render no value to my family, because I'm going to wait for others to change instead of saying, what can I do to be different? And then, of course, Neil, you got those who questions. You know, who dropped the ball? Who made the mistake? Who left the wet towels on the bathroom floor? Who made the mess in the sink? I mean, parents' job is not to punish and to scare children. Our job is to teach and to train up, and it's pretty hard to teach and train up if we're yelling, who did it? So the who questions, as we frame up in the book, are all about blame. The why questions are about victim thinking, and the when questions are about procrastination. So what all of our material is about at QBQ, whether we're working with corporate churches or families, is to take those why, when, and who questions and change them into what and how questions. So the three guidelines for the QBQ, making up a better question, would be, it begins with what or how, what or how, it contains the word I, and we should come back to that, and it focuses on action. So QBQs always sound like, what can I do? So instead of asking, when will my son open up to me, we should be asking, how can I be a better listener? And you can feel, Neil, you can feel the difference in the focus between that externally blaming kind of question and that QBQ, which is an accountable question.
We're learning about how to be an outstanding parent and raise great kids using the power of personal accountability. We're going to get to those what and how questions and use the I word here in just a moment. Looking forward to more discussion just ahead with John G. Miller, who is the founder of QBQ Inc., and has written several books, and the one we're talking today is that he co-wrote with his wife. It's Parenting the QBQ Way, and we'll continue more in just a moment. By the way, you have a question or comment, you want to start queuing up, as it were, you can do that at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can always go online at myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, and we'll get more with John Miller in just a moment. Stay tuned.
One of the most difficult things to do is to forgive a family member who has hurt us. Hey, this is Debbie Griffith with Everyday Matters. We want to make them understand how much they've hurt us, and then we want them to ask for forgiveness and change their behavior. Yeah, I've been there. But as I was talking to God about this, I came across 1 Peter 3:9, and it really spoke to my hurting heart. God laid out for me what I needed to do. Never return evil for evil or insult for insult, scolding, tongue-lashing, but on the contrary, blessing, praying for their welfare, happiness, and protection, and truly loving them. For know that to this you have been called, that you may yourselves inherit a blessing. Wow, I thought, it's actually part of God's plan for me to bless this person and pray for their happiness and protection, which means truly loving them as He does. Others will know Him by how much we love others every day. For more encouragement, visit DebbieGriffith.com.
Hey, It's 18 past the hour, and you're listening to Connecting Faith, and happy to connect today with John G. Miller. John is founder of QBQ Inc., and he's worked with a number of companies and businesses and faith-based organizations, individuals, and churches to talk about personal accountability, and we're learning about the QBQ way, parenting the QBQ way, the question behind the question, and we talked about some of those why, when, and who questions and changing to what and how. And maybe before we get to that, John, I'm wondering, do most of us need to maybe to unlearn our parenting heritage before we can sort of apply some new ways of doing things? I mean, we all think that, I mean, none of us actually know how to parent, I guess, really. We just do kind of what we learned or saw it modeled.
Well, Neil, I totally agree with the whole concept that our parents trained us by accident or on purpose to parent, because our only role models were mom and dad. But just as challenging in the book as the statement, you know, my child is a product of my parenting is, I think this is another challenging statement. Parenting is not a born skill. It's a learned skill. And so without good, thoughtful, purposeful parenting, we can't be really accountable parents, because we're going to end up, like you say, parenting the way our mom or dad did, or maybe we'll be winging it, or maybe emulating our friends who aren't the best parents. I'm not saying they're not, but they might not be. Or maybe we're getting all of our tips off of social media. What we are trying to recommend with parents is you were trained to parent by your parents. They did some good things, but they probably made some mistakes. Now it's time to be fully accountable for your learning. What can I do to learn and grow as a mom or dad? What can I do to learn new skills of parenting? You see, this, Neil, is the personal accountability message. Certainly never to play victim and say, oh, well, I only can parent the way my mom and dad did and they weren't very good. No, stop, pause, change your thinking. What can I do to improve? Absolutely, we need to undo much of what our parents taught us when they parented, even if they were good parents. I mean, my parents were pretty good, but I could identify the mistakes they made if we had more time, Neil.
Well, let's not go there, because it will start resembling those remarks real soon. So I do want to talk. Let's get back to talking, though, about the what and how questions and how we get to the more I questions. And maybe more important, what does that do? Does it do something for us, or is it do something for our kids?
Let me share this with you, Neil, and with your listeners. I've been teaching the QBQ for a lot of years now. And the absolute number one takeaway when we teach it, again, in any realm, is this. And this is really amazing, because it's already in the Bible, which means it's been around a long time. I can only change me. That's the number one takeaway. People come into our corporate sessions, church sessions, our training program, read the parenting book, read QBQ, doesn't matter. They come in frustrated with another human being. Well, you know, my son just doesn't do what I want him to do. Well, my boss doesn't train me. Well, my sister never listens to me. You could go on and on and on. We're human, and we get frustrated with other people, and then judgment comes out. We all know that. It's easy to judge. And the number one takeaway from our material is people say, you know what? I've been trying to fix Sally. I've been trying to fix Dan. I've been trying to fix my son, my wife. Today I'm done. I'm going to work on the only entity I can control, me. What can I do to change me? People tell us this over and over and over. And if you go to Matthew 7, 1 through 5, judge not lest you be judged. Before I remove that speck from my wife's eye, I better be working on the beam on my own. We all know that's the truth. And yet, because we're so human, people are all trying to fix each other. In fact, Neil, you want to hear something funny? I believe the reason I get hired to speak on personal accountability is because some executive wants me to change his people.
Sure.
That's what happens. The motivation for bringing us in is the executive says, well, darn it, my people won't change. I need some help. John, come fix them. And I'm happy to do it. And it's a life-changing message. But what's hilarious about a session like that is 20 minutes into the session, I can see the executive who hired me in the front row starting to say to himself, I can see it in his eyes, he's saying, oh, this is for me. So moms and dads, when they read Parenting the QBQ Way, they very quickly realize this is not a book to hit our 14-year-old over the head, and I mean that metaphorically, and shape them up, make them be responsible. This is a book that helps me be a better dad, helps a mom be a better mom. looking in the mirror. It's a powerful thing, Neil.
Give us, that would be, I think, a good time to just sort of take an example. All right, how do we apply that I can only change me, changing the question to I, you know, what can I do differently? Give us an example, maybe in maybe even your own parenting, whether it's getting kids to clean up the room or, you know, or sassing back or whatever it might be.
Well, those are all different topics. You know, cleaning the room, that's a boundary issue parents have to decide inside their families. You know, how clean does it have to be? What are the consequences? I think it always comes down to pausing. Because parenting is not easy, we all know that. And kids don't come with instruction manuals, we all know that. But I do believe if we're not careful, we let anger come out. And we tend to yell. Sometimes I kid a group. I'll say, you know, how many of you parents yell too much? And hands go up and the people laugh. We just get frustrated as moms and dads. And so the power in the QBQ methodology of changing the question is in the pausing. You know what? I'm frustrated. I'm upset. I'm angry. You know, feelings just are, Neil. Just admit those feelings. Say, okay, instead of lashing out at my 17-year-old one more time, saying, why do you keep wearing clothes like that? I'm going to pause, and I'm going to say, what can I do to communicate my values? What can I do to be a more effective parent? Just that pausing, a psychologist would tell us, is very healthy. You know, you're talking to a guy today, Neil, that is quite verbal, as you maybe can tell. And all my life, my mouth has run slightly ahead of my brain. All my life. And so the QBQ for John Miller just helps me say, okay, what could I have done to have prevented this problem? So the next time you see your child doing something you don't approve of, first of all, we need to say, what can I do differently? What can I do right now as a mom or a dad? But also, we might have to recognize, I've been making excuses. Maybe I've been enabling him. Maybe I've been blaming the schools. Maybe I'm waiting for the teacher to handle it. Maybe I haven't taken ownership for the issue. And that's what QBQ is all about, is I own the results in my family. It's like the social media thing, Neil. It just kills me. Parents complain about cell phone usage and Facebook and Twitter and all the social media stuff. And what we like to say to parents is, hey, if social media is a problem in your home, it's your fault. You let it in. And they go, oh, you're right. And that's exactly what happens when I speak in the business world. We can blame all the economic factors in the other department, or we could say, wait a minute, I own the result. What can I do differently today? Personal accountability, Neil, it just applies everywhere.
So if we find ourselves, you know, maybe even pausing, but we find ourselves nagging, what's that a symptom of?
I would guess, in my own opinion, nagging is a symptom of we feel we've tried everything and nothing's worked. But the question is, have we blamed? Have we been playing victim? Have we been pointing fingers and procrastinating? Have we been externalizing, which means, you know, not taking accountability for the problem? Have we not been setting up consequences? I mean, this is not new. Setting up consequences for kids. Like, there's a story in the book about Marie, whose son wanted to get his driver's license. You know, Neil, maybe you remember those days. When you're 15, all you can think about is getting your driver's license.
Yeah.
And he wanted that. I understand that. She understood that. You understand that. But he was failing Spanish. And she basically pulled in strong parenting. And this is what we see. We see a lot of weak parenting out there, W-E-A-K, weak parenting. Strong parenting says what Marie did, the story is in the book, she simply told her son, you will not get your license until you pull a B in Spanish. And like most parents, she could have used him to take the little sister to the dance lessons. She could have used some driving help. She could have used somebody helping do the errands. But she didn't give in to that. She said, wait a minute, I'm going to stand strong on principle. If you don't have a good grade in Spanish, you're not getting a license. And that's what a lot of parents aren't doing today. There's no consequences for poor results or bad actions and behaviors. But the PQ method, PQW method, we call it PQW internally, parenting the QBQ way, it's simply all about pausing and saying, okay, what can I do to handle this situation more effectively than I have in the past?
Which I think, you know, get the sort of procrastination that seems like that's where things probably break down, isn't it? Where we don't address problems and stick to them, right?
Well, Neil, we all know that. In all areas of life, mountains only come from molehills. And truly, if we dealt with things early. See, again, this material came from my work in the training field. And I had a mentor who used to teach, the first time you see a problem with your employee, don't say, oh, well, it'll go away, oh, well, it'll go away, and then nine times later explode. Well, that concept can be brought into the household. We let things slide. Our children's dress, their language, their behavior, they're not getting their homework done on time, whatever the subject is. See, this is the thing with parenting. There's so much stuff to talk about, but we're talking about general principles here. Deal with it now. As we say in parenting, the QBQ way, now is almost always better than later.
Well, we're glad that you're with us now, John, because we've got questions, and we're thankful that you will address some answers to us and maybe challenge us a little bit. Hopefully that'll be the case. And in just a couple of minutes, we'll go to one of our questions. In fact, you'd like to join the conversation. Maybe what you've heard today has prompted a specific, and we'll let John offer some insight, some perspective. We're talking about how to be an outstanding parent, raise great kids using the power of personal accountability. That's the subtitle for the book, Parenting, the QBQ Way, and John G. Miller is my guest. He is the founder of QBQ, Inc., and you can join the conversation with a phone call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can always go online, and you can use our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there, and we'll take your questions and more coming up in just a couple minutes with John G. Miller. Thanks for tuning in today to Connecting Faith. My guest today is John G. Miller. John is founder of QBQ, Inc., and he's worked with a number of major companies, as well as government and faith-based organizations and churches and thousands of individuals to help make personal accountability a core value. And he's authored several books. I'd recommend them to you. QBQ, The Question Behind the Question. That'll be just a good summary of our discussion today. Flipping the Switch, Unleash the Power of Personal Accountability. Using the QBQ and Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional. And the one we're talking about today, he's co-written with his wife. They are the parents of seven, by the way, and now a couple of grandkids. Parenting the QBQ Way, How to Be an Outstanding Parent, Raise Great Kids Using the Power of Personal Accountability. And John, we do have some questions coming in, so I'm just going to jump right to those. This is one from email online at myfaithradio.com. Susan says, my question is, how can I be more consistent disciplining my 11-year-old daughter who constantly pushes us off with, in a minute, or I will, and she wants to, you know, go to a friend's house or a sleepover, et cetera. She has a hard time taking no for an answer, accepting chores. So how can I approach her differently?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff in that great question. I think sometimes we have to look at the past. How have we gotten to this point? See, that's accountability. We're not going to beat ourselves up as moms and dads, but we're going to say, wait a minute, okay, my child doesn't do what I ask. How did we get here? Then we start to process, you know, for a long time now, I've not set up consequences. I've nagged her. I've used too many words. That's a great concept for moms and dads, including the Millers. Use less words. What have I done to get here? See, that's accountability. Okay, then once you've processed that and say, okay, I own it. It's not her natural way. It's not her high spirit. It's not her strong will. It's the way I've parented her. She's a product of me. It's the way I parented her. Okay. Then you can set up new strategies and tactics and everything we're talking about. Well, what can I do to learn new skills? Well, go to a class. Get the best book out there on how to discipline, how to set up natural consequences. I mean, we think we've got a lot of great stuff in our book, but there's a lot of places to learn parenting skills. And then I would suggest there's a nugget in the Parenting the QBQ Way book that I'm very proud of, quite honestly, when Karen and I wrote it, because we call it the Discipline D's. There are six moments when we believe a parent should discipline. See, our fear is parents lack the desire to discipline. You can always learn the how-to, but they lack the desire, and then they don't know when. Their timing's off. They're too tough on a small thing. They're not tough enough on a big thing. So in Parenting the QBQ Way, we have a chapter called Be a Strong Parent, and it lists the six discipline D's. And there's six times, all starting with D, when we should discipline our children. Be strong.
Well, in fact, Rich had just sent in a note. He said, you know, this approach is good, but I think you'll find it's difficult for parents to adopt because we're used to softer parenting. Is that true? And has that something that's come about culturally and we just sort of adopted it?
Well, that's an interesting question because Karen and I talk about that sometimes. There's a story in the chapter about grandparenting where, you know, my dad was born in 1921, Neil. I was born in 58, so he grew up in a very different generation, and I can sum it up with one phrase. Children were to be seen and not heard. And so there's a story in the book back in 1998 when our only son, Michael, was 10. I was sharing something with my dad who was here in Denver. My dad at that time was 77. My 10-year-old son jumped in and said to me, he said, "No, Dad, it was over at, that store, not that store." In other words, my son actually corrected an incorrect fact in my story. I didn't mind. I said, "Thanks, Mike," and I went on. And my father, the man born in 1921, jumped all over his grandson because, once again, back in 1921, you were seen and not heard, and you never corrected your parents. The key to that story is you have to decide how you want to parent. But if my dad's generation was a bit too harsh, you're right. I think probably we've gone a little too soft. We don't have a conversation with a two-year-old when they're acting up. We give them a very firm time out with clear direction. This is not a time for a conversation. Soft. Yes, I think we've gone a little soft in our parenting.
Let's take a call from Nancy. She's calling from Oakdale, and this is a good question, I think, as it expands. Nancy, go ahead. You're on with John Miller.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm an early childhood music educator, and I get to see a lot of parents and children interacting in my classes. And I see every now and then a parent who really doesn't set any boundaries whatsoever, and the child runs and runs and runs and is somewhat... very disrespectful in many respects. How can I address that subject? Because you can see that as a 3.5-year-old at 19.5, they're going to be doing that exact same thing, but with bigger things. And I'd like to say something to the parents, but how do you do that?
Well, Nancy, that's funny you phrase it that way, because we say in the book, the problems you have with your teenager, you had those problems when they were a toddler. This stuff doesn't happen overnight. Now, you probably know a lot more than I do in this realm because of what you do for a living. I mean, what are your choices? You know, talk to the parent directly. You know, truth is not harsh. Truth is truth. Maybe it's time to share that truth with a parent in a gentle way that their child is out of control. I don't know what the school's policies are. You know, how do you communicate to a parent who has a child that's running out of control, and you know it's because of the way they were parented? I mean, how have you handled it?
I have just allowed the parent to do whatever he's willing to do. And this last time, he didn't do anything, and the child even took his chair away from him. And so I've gotten to the point where I need to say something. I need to say, you know what, this is very important to do this now before you can't do it.
Well, that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point, Nancy, and it's so easy to avoid. I mean, we all like to avoid. Most of us like to avoid confrontation. Let's be honest about that. You know, we live in a fairly nice culture. We want to be nice and all that. Maybe you need to ask that parent to take the chair and the child and get out. And I don't mean that harshly. I mean, get out in the hallway, calm down, get things under control. Maybe there has to be a consequence in that fashion.
All right. Hopefully the book may have some good recommendation for you, Nancy. Thanks for your call. Let's jump to Annie. Annie's listening in St. Paul and wonders if there's some application to marriage. Hi, Annie. Go ahead.
Hi there. Hi. I just have a question more on a marriage basis with using your advice. What if me as a wife sometimes feels in a conversation with me and my husband, he gets angry and places blame on me, and it's kind of been a pattern. Do I address something like that? Do I just use different ways to talk to him about it? Or what would you suggest on when we get in those, maybe a heated discussion, or he gets angry,
you
I feel
bet.
Like blame is on me.
I'm sorry, Neil, I did not catch her name.
It's Annie.
Annie, I'm sorry. Annie, that's a great question. And the best way to answer it is for me to tell a story quickly. In 1991, after 11 years of marriage, my beautiful wife, Karen, came to me and asked me a question on a Tuesday morning while we were living in Plymouth, Minnesota. And here was the question. She said, Johnny, I'm going to marital counseling. You coming? And we went. And here we are all these years later. We'll never be fixed. We'll never be perfect. But I believe, and Karen does too, believe in that the positive value of a marital counselor, someone who can neutrally help you resolve these kinds of things, deal with our baggage, look at our habits and our behaviors, set up strategies and tactics. Counseling, I would never shy away from that. And yes, there's a ton of stuff in the Parenting the QBQ Way book that helps a marriage, because the theme throughout the book from front to back is personal accountability. I can only change me. And so you can't change your husband, he can't change you, but we all get into those arguments where if only he would be different. And then we get frustrated and angry, and something that starts small ends up big. I'm going to give you the ultimate QBQ that we teach in the parenting book. The ultimate question behind the question, when all these great questions have failed, here's the ultimate QBQ. How can I let go of what I can't control? That is an emotional strength and healthy kind of question. When I ask that, I'm emotionally strong. How can I let go of what I can't control? You can't stop your husband from blaming, but all you can say is, when you're done pointing fingers at me, I'd like to have a conversation. And then possibly that day end the conversation. But I can't recommend strongly enough getting a marital counselor. My wife and I have had several as we've moved over the years, and they've always add value to our lives. And remember this truth. The best thing we can wrap a child in is a healthy marriage. Absolutely.
John, talk about how long it maybe took you to get you and your wife and your family made to sort of get into this pattern of operating in a different paradigm, if you will, the QBQ way. Was it a matter of just sort of, you know, saying the words or pausing? Or, I mean, obviously it develops over time.
So, Neil, are you asking when did we become perfect?
Well, yes, I guess that's what I was thinking, yes. So I wanted to know how much time I needed before I...
Well, your wife tells me you need a lot of time.
Yes, she does recommend that, yes.
Well, I've got to say, the QBQ is part of our culture, but that doesn't mean we still don't ask the wrong questions, that we don't get frustrated. What I think QBQ does for us as a family, it gives us common language. Of course, the joke for years now, as I've been out speaking since like 95 on QBQ, is my kids, as they've grown, they'd look at me and they'd say, Dad, isn't there a QBQ here for you somewhere? I mean, it's like being a pastor. Your children sometimes use the content against the dad just for fun. QBQ is part of our vernacular. It's part of our culture. We know what it means. I'm going to give you a little different story. If you know who Butler University basketball team is, Brad
sure.
Stevens is a fan of QBQ. And what he does is he has his 20-year-olds or his freshmen, his 18, 19-year-olds, read QBQ. And then during a game, if the ref has made a bad call or if somebody's missed their pass or their spot or their man, they come off to a timeout. Whenever the coaches start to hear frustration and blame and finger pointing, the coaches at Butler University just say three letters, QBQ. And the players know, okay, right, accountability. Let's get back on task. And that can happen as a family. When the family learns QBQ, we have a new program for kids, middle schoolers and high schoolers, called I Own It. Building character through accountability. I own it. I mean, I know it sounds like I'm selling, Neil, though I am all salesperson, but we have products now for the schools, the churches, the corporate world, the parents, but the theme is the same, personal accountability. And the Millers are not perfect. I will say this. We have a tendency to stop and say, okay, what could I have done differently here? And that's a good thing. That's emotional health. And even though we have our battles, because we have grown children now, we have three teenagers, my wife and I, our marriage is not perfect, that QBQ message of accountability really helps create smooth sailing on some days.
I was interested, can siblings apply this to each other, and maybe have your kids done that in your home?
Well, right now, we've got three teen daughters in the house, and sometimes, can you believe this, Neil, sometimes there's some bickering.
No.
Sometimes there's some squabbles and some disagreements. And we're always coaching. See, that's what parents do. We're there. I don't mean we, the Millers. I mean parents, be there. You got to be there. You can't coach what you don't observe. So if we don't have time with our kids, we can't nip this stuff in the bud. That's what parents are doing. We're building children. So what we do is we say, hey, Jazzy, come on, QBQ, Shar, just stop. You don't need to respond. That's what good parents are always doing. They're always coaching. Someday they stop building. They start relating. And that's another discussion. That's in the book as well. We move from building to relating.
We're going to get there in just a moment. We need to take a short break. And another call from one of our listeners, Allie's waiting. And so we'll get to that and more and talk more with John G. Miller about the parenting the QBQ way. How to be an outstanding parent, raise great kids using the power of personal accountability. Hopefully you're being encouraged today and challenged and get some more insight about the role of coaching and parenting, what that looks like. And the wise insight just ahead. Stay tuned to Connecting Faith.
From the studios of HCJB Global, Beyond the Call with Ron Klein.
Back in the days of the Iron Curtain, listening to HCJB Global in communist Russia was risky. And boy, did Olga know it. For one, her husband was angry when he found out she was listening. "We're communists," he said. "We can't do this. We'll be severely persecuted." But Olga kept listening. Well, the rest of the family didn't dare tune in either, but eventually they were interested, and all of them got saved. Let me tell you, the family paid a price for following Jesus. Her husband lost his job. The family was persecuted, but they stood firm, knowing their faith pleased God and their rewards are in heaven. This story reminds me of Hebrews chapter 11, which some call the Hall of Faith. The saints kept their eyes on Jesus. So keep looking up. Go beyond the call. I'm Ron Klein.
This is Connecting Faith. My guest is John G. Miller. He's the founder of QBQ, Inc., and has written a number of books. The one we're referencing is called Parenting the QBQ Way, How to Be an Outstanding Parent, Raise Great Kids Using the Power of Personal Accountability. And kind enough to join us today, and we're taking some of your questions. And Allie's been waiting patiently. And so, Allie, go ahead. You're on with John Miller. You've got a couple of kids, right?
I have two daughters. They're 2 and 4 years old. And my first one is a very mild-mannered little girl and fairly quiet, you know, spunky and sort of strong-willed. And then I had a second one, and Molly is a screamer. She doesn't get what she wants. She screams about it, and we're trying to figure out how do you stop that as fast as we can so it's not, you know, continued, I guess. I don't know.
All right.
Well, Allie, I think it's never going to happen because her name is Molly.
Oh, okay.
My daughter's name is Molly, number 4, and she was a terror. I just had to say that in case she's listening at
Bethel
University,
sure,
in Roseville today.
Good.
but truly, Allie, I can't be in the moment and see a situation. The question becomes, how are you responding to her screaming? The question is, are you, and I'm going to use this word, are you scared of her screaming? See, when we start becoming fearful of our kids' behaviors, then we start to kind of kowtow to them. We get soft. We start, even without knowing it, we're changing our parenting behaviors, and we're enabling them. We're allowing them to do that because, or let's say to engage in a bad behavior because we don't want them to scream again. Maybe she needs to be allowed to scream. Maybe it's a question of what she's getting from you when she screams. But I was joking about the Molly part because our child, number 4, she was much different than the other 3. But we still had to find those moments to discipline. We still needed to be strong. We still needed to transfer our values. We still needed to be good, effective parents and not let her strong will change us.
John, you talked about just a few moments ago the role of coaching and how parenting kind of changes over time. And I want to ask you a little bit about grandparenting, if there's some tips there, too. But talk about how maybe those roles change as our children grow.
Thank you. As we say in the book, parenting never ends, but it changes. And, of course, that struck us a few years ago as our kids moved out of their teens and into their 20s. You know, you're always a mom, you're always a dad, but it has to change. And here's the key, Neil. If it doesn't change, we end up being controlling adult parents of adult children, and then we destroy trust, and we destroy the relationship, and we push them away. So, again, when they're 1, 4, 8, 9, 15, pick your age, we're building. We're definitely shaping, coaching, training them up. And all of a sudden, there's that time where it starts to be less building. Now, let me be blunt. Less advice giving. Less giving unsolicited advice. And more relating to them. Listening to them. Knowing them. Being a little bit more of their friend. Then they get into their 20s. They're on their own. We have to create independence in these children. You know, people talk to me politically about being concerned with the entitlement thinking in our country. Well, here's the key. We got to make sure it's not in our families. And we've allowed children to grow into their 20s and not take personal accountability for their lives. Sometimes we have to say, how can I let go of what I can't control? And we begin to relate to that adult child, but we're done building them. Now, if they come to us for advice, and you know as a dad, Neil, if our 25-year-old comes and says, Dad, what should I do? Man, we're going to be all over them like a cheap suit. We're going to have some tips. We're going to have some wisdom. But the parent who doesn't let go is the parent who loses the adult child because they're always trying to tell them what to do, and that's no good.
So as a grandparent, are there ways that our grandchildren are always perfect, obviously. But
yes, that's true, even in our family.
Yeah.
We have beautiful Joshua and beautiful Becca right now, ages almost 3 and 4.5 months. Here's probably the general advice Karen and I would share. And we're not long-term grandparents, only 2.5, 3 years. But we would say to the children who have the children, you know, our kids, don't be defensive. Let your parents share some wisdom. They have gone before you. Honor that. Respect that. Before you reach out to Facebook, reach out to your mom or your dad. Ask them some advice. And we would say to the parents, you know, the grandparents, careful. You're on weak and thin ice. Careful with the unsolicited advice. Sometimes we just have to bite our tongue and go in the other room and not give any tips because it's not our place. So there's two general tips there. Kids, don't be defensive. Listen to your elders. And elders, watch your boundaries. Don't give too much advice unasked.
One of the comments that came in, one of our listeners, John, says, can this be used in sharing the gospel with someone?
Well, in the Parenting the QBQ Way book, we don't list scripture other than maybe in one heading we do quote the Matthew 1-5 scripture about judge not lest ye be judged. We do have a program for churches called Specks and Planks. Specks and Planks, it's a workshop, a study group product. Small group product for churches that ties QBQ directly to the scriptures. All of this is at QBQ.com. So absolutely, QBQ is needed in the church. One thing I didn't reveal is my dad was Cornell wrestling coach for a quarter of a century, Neil, but also a pastor for 40 years. I grew up as a pastor's son, and nobody can tell me there's not blame and victim thinking and entitlement and procrastination in churches. They need QBQ. But the best way to bring it in is with our Specks and Planks product.
Well, let me ask you, maybe just in I think the listener is wondering about, in terms of sharing faith, are there ways that we can use QBQ principles in maybe just communicating with others at the workplace or, you know, at the gym or where it might be?
I certainly think by modeling or emulating QBQ and practicing it for those around us, we are demonstrating the love of Jesus because it is exactly what we were taught. You know, we were taught not to judge others, but to say, what can I do to change me? I mean, not quite Christ's words. You know what I'm getting at. So to practice QBQ is a good thing. It's a good witness. I don't know if atheists or agnostics around us in the workplace are automatically going to say, hey, I see Jesus in that person. I don't know if they'll know what scripture it's related to. Maybe as you draw people closer to you by practicing QBQ, then there's the chance to share our faith. You see, one of the things taught in all of our material is this truth. Humility is the cornerstone of leadership. Neil, humility is the cornerstone of leadership. And so when I start bringing QBQ into my life, I demonstrate humility. And by golly, humility is a magnet. It attracts people. And if we attract people at work, then maybe we can share our faith at that time.
Do your kids come back to you and say, hey, thanks, Mom and Dad, for helping us think through and for modeling this, or, you know, as you talk to other maybe parents and kids? I guess the question is, how is it making a difference in the lives of those that have read and tried to apply the principles?
Now, are you talking about our kids, Neil? I want to make sure I'm clear.
Yeah. We'll start with yours. And,
yeah.
if you know any other kids, I don't know. Just
Well, you know, Neil, I don't like any kids but my own.
Well, I hear you on that. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of accountability, a lot of places to apply accountability. I would say where our kids today thank us is on the money front. If you know who Dave Ramsey is, I've got one famous friend. Now I have two famous friends, Dave Ramsey and you, Neil.
All right.
And Dave requires QBQ as reading for his staff. Nobody can join Dave's staff without reading QBQ, because Dave Ramsey knows there's an absolute connection between being debt-free and being accountable. And I would say on that one front, our kids today, you know, I make a pretty good living as a speaker and as an author, but our kids today, our original kids, all in their 20s, would say, thank you for not letting me become entitled. Thank you for not letting me be a victim. Thank you for not letting me play victim in my life. Thank you for teaching me to work. All of those are good values. And I think that's where our kids would say thank you.
Yeah. If you're dealing with issues of blame and victim thinking and procrastination in parenting or maybe life in general, you would benefit from the insights of John G. Miller and the QBQ way, QBQ.com. John, we've just basically a minute left. Any maybe a final word of encouragement or challenge for us?
Well, absolutely. I always would like to close on this kind of a thought, and that is, if you've been listening, identify that person in your life who's just frustrating the bejeevers out of you. Do you have bejeevers up in Minnesota?
Way too often, yes.
Just identify that person and ask yourself, what have I been doing to try to fix them lately? What have I been doing to try to change them? And then say, you know what, I commit today. I make a solemn vow to let it go and ask the QBQ, the question behind the question, what can I do to change me? That's so powerful. You'll be amazed how it enhances the relationship.
Find out more on the website. I know, John, you do lots of speaking, and that's obviously an opportunity, and there's a number of resources available on the website at QBQ.com.
John, thank you, Neil.
John, great to visit with you. John G. Miller is the founder of QBQ, Inc., and worked with a number of Fortune 500 companies, government and faith-based organizations, churches, and thousands of individuals, helping us to understand personal accountability and make it a core value. And you can find out more on the website, QBQ.com, the question behind the question. And the book we've been referencing today is called Parenting, the QBQ Way. And we're glad to have John G. Miller on with us today. Hope that you can join us tomorrow on the broadcast as we spend a little time with Margaret Feinberg, who is able to find God at work and evidence of God's handiwork all around us in the everyday ordinary. And we're looking forward to chatting with Margaret tomorrow as well. And stay tuned for Live the Promise coming up at 3. And don't forget, it's Everyday Relationships with Dr. Greg Smalley at 4 today. Brand new program here on the Faith Radio lineup today here on Faith Radio.